Siren Radio.
Wonderful. It is the first Thursday in October 2019, at least as far as our particular time zone is concerned. And Gabriella, what are you going to deliver for the world?
The weather.
Mm.
Okay, so the weather for Lincoln today is highs of 12 degrees centigrade, lows of 9 degrees centigrade, and it's a day with moderate breezes and sunny intervals.
Live from Gibraltar, with or without her faithful friend Frodo, it's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
And I'm seeing in the Gibraltar Chronicle that a new pictorial book makes Gibraltar's history fun. Was that ever just hyper serious? I mean, I thought you always had a laugh there on the old rock.
Yeah. Gibraltar's history, I guess, well, it's not really fun.
Is it not? Not too many sort of happy phrases in terms of the whole thing. According to somebody you may know, because I think she's actually writing for the Gibraltar Chronicle, Alice Mascarenhas.
Yeah, I know Alice.
Okay, so, I mean, yeah, is Alice, I mean, does she have a sense of fun? Is she somebody who basically comes into the office wearing a red nose every so often? Is it something where she, when she looks at this new pictorial book, she actually says, my favourite page of the latest book on the history of Gibraltar is page 37. Wonderful. That's some of your favourite page. Have you actually sort of followed that through, or is it just a case of, Alice, I don't know what you're talking about here, really. I mean, all sorts of things. Or have you even had a chance to look at, or is it a case of, don't be silly, I can't be dealing with book reviews. I'm already planning for the Gibraltar Literary Festival.
I haven't seen the book myself.
Mm, very good.
So,
yeah. Notice Rory,
so
effective honesty there. Our politicians could learn so much, you know. Unless she's denying everything. Exactly. Are you saying, Gabriella, that you've never actually done a review before completely without saying the actual thing you're supposed to be reviewing?
No, I've always seen the things I review.
Wow. You know, I mean, that's dangerously close to being ethical. I could almost get the words out there. Rory, you finished last week, of course, the week of excitement that was the Lincoln Book Festival. Your thoughts on the things that you actually saw? He was saying, Gabriella, that he actually tasted some 19th century cheese, or maybe it was cheese prepared a la the 19th century, as opposed to 150 or so years old.
Oh my goodness, that'd be in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
No, but the Lincoln Book Festival was quite remarkable, really. I went to a few events. All of it was themed around the
history.
Good old
and
Queen
Victoria. Exactly.
And books kind of surrounding, whether that be kind of her life or just the 19th century and the England that she ruled as a whole.
I think you'll find she was in charge of the British
Empire. She was in charge of like a third of the world.
In the next few weeks, of course, it may well be that the monarch of who happens to be in charge of Britain actually might just be looking after England, but perhaps let's not go there at this time of the day, you know? Because after all, it's all looking very good now that the plans have been revealed.
Oh, I'm sure. Hmm. But if there is one thing that I don't know a lot of history about, it is Gibraltar. But thankfully there is now a new book that is apparently a lot of fun.
There's quite a lot of them. There's the new one, and then...
Is there an old one as well?
Festival.
This is wonderful.
He was famous as well.
He was famous, but obviously no longer, because that's why we can't remember him. Never mind.
He was famous, I met him.
And you probably remembered you, Gabriella. But at the end of the day, he said no. You know, that's the key thing. You know, drum roll, no. But we'll find out more about Gibraltarian history, I'm sure, as things proceed and develop. And so what do you have in store for the rest of the day?
Well, we've got a lot of election coverage for the next, till the 17th of October. So really, our pages are now getting full with candidate contributions, debates,
and looking ahead, of course,
announcements, manifestos coming out tomorrow for one of the parties. Today for one of the parties, tomorrow for another one. So now it's really gearing up. So we've got a lot of manifestos, promises, debates. So that's really what it's going to be for the next couple of weeks.
In fact, interesting enough, just looking ahead to more exciting times, the GSD, that will be the Gibraltar Social Democracy Party, yesterday announced Gibraltar 2050. Simply 10 to 9 for the best of us. Plan to improve quality of life. The GSD yesterday set out a 30-year strategy for planning and development designed to improve Gibraltarians' quality of life and make Gibraltar a better place to live. Is it a very bad place to live at present, Gabriella? I mean, because if they've got to make it better, it sort of implies it's not great at present, is it? I mean, you can share with us. You know, you're among friends.
You can make things better that are already good.
That's very true. I didn't think you could improve on perfection. I really didn't.
It's a nice place to live.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, everything can always be improved.
It's very true. We approach perfection, we never quite achieve it. Rory, would you like to put those last two questions to Gabriella Peralta, please?
I suppose I can on that sad note. So, Gabriella, have you had an interesting telephonic link with us today on the show?
Yeah, I have, thank you.
And will you be back sometime soon, probably with the weather?
Mm-hmm. In a week's time, I think.
But not next week.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I've come out with that. I've announced it on radio.
Yeah.
I'm going to be in New York next week.
Oh, wow.
So time difference and everything.
Now, are you going to be in New York on the Wednesday?
Yes.
You see, we could actually bring you back to the Midweek Drive evening show and do a little bounce of that. I mean, that would surprise Phil Linus, I can tell you, if we sort of brought you in on that sort of basis. Shall we gamble? Shall we use emails and various other bits and pieces and say maybe, just maybe, when it's like 1 o'clock
maybe.
In New York or 6 o'clock,
oh,
you know, mid-afternoon, etc.
No. What time is it?
Afternoon. New York is behind time. I mean, obviously, if we reach you now in New York, then it would be about 3 a.m. in the morning. It'd be ridiculous.
6 hours?
Yes, exactly. 6 hours. You should know, Rory. You've just come back from the thing. Sorted through. Although you were poorly. Yeah. Anyway, let's look at that. So not on the Thursday, Midweek Drive Morning Edition, but maybe, time differences permitting, etc., where it'll be early afternoon in the city of the Big Apple. Maybe we might connect with you then.
Okay.
It's exciting. Here's Judy.
The night is bitter. The stars have lost their glitter. The winds grow colder. Suddenly you're older. All because of the man that got away. No more his eager call. The writing's on the wall. The dreams you've dreamed have off and undone you. That great beginning has seen a final inning. Don't know what happened. It's all a crazy game. Just no let up the live long night and looking for the man that got away.
Yes, Rory, Academy Award winning Renee Zellweger. I think it's pretty much a done deal. I mean, the way she's actually incarnated herself within the whole role of Ms. Garland. It's almost as though you're saying farewell to the man who got away, but somebody who hopefully will never get away, because he's on a signed, sealed and delivered contract to deliver excellence and wonderment from the point of view of royal prerogatives, discussions of prorogations of Parliament, discussions of film musical lines as well, and even pointing out that, yeah, we did Ad Astra the week before. I know, it's just one of those things. Don't worry, look back at the podcast thing. Richard Fitzwilliams, how are you?
Well, I can only say that I am very, very surprised if you could fit in a bit of royal news, because on a royal tour, we've had sensational statements before, but these statements have been of a different nature. You remember Diana and Charles in India in 1992, and the princess posing in front of the Taj Mahal, and also the kiss that wasn't at the polo match, and subsequently of the South Korean tour, where it was perfectly clear from the body language that the marriage had completely broken down. Well, that was sensational then. Now we have, at the end of, I have to say, what was a brilliant tour of Southern Africa. I mean, Harry and Meghan were superb. They certainly also were continuing Diana's undoubted expertise and truly unique way she handled
it. It's a way to pave the rationale before actually going head to head with the Daily Mail and suing them straight in the post. Go for the whole thing.
Well, I would say certainly that it is perhaps no surprise that there's a legal action against the Mail, given what was published. And I think that the Duchess must have had, since you own copyright, apparently, this is the law over your own correspondence, and she will have been advised that she is very likely to win it. But royals should always be very, very wary of going to court, because although I think there are only four cases that I can think of, it would be 7th in 1870 and 1891, the divorce case and what was called the Baccarat scandal. He appeared in court to the horror of Queen Victoria, I would say. Then there was Viscount Lilly, the son of Princess Margaret in 1990, and on a matter dealing with one of her dogs, which bit two children, Princess Anne, in 2002. So this is frankly something the royals don't do. And the other thing that isn't done, or normally wouldn't be done, would be a statement of the sort at the end of a royal tour where it's an official tour, in a sense, you're representing your country and the Queen as well. And this, again, is a royal couple like no other. There is absolutely no doubt that Harry is haunted by what happened to his mother, and he sees the same, albeit in a different way and at a different time.
I think the palace are sending the police to actually arrest you there, Richard, so I think we need to be very careful at this particular stage.
Well, I can only say that royal commentators appear to be very, very critical of the way this has been handled. The point also being not so much what was done with reference to the court case, but the timing when on a royal tour. But of course, that was accompanied by Harry's statement, and I mean, the way he feels, who drafted it, who advised it, this is what the papers are going over today. But I mean, this tour was an absolute triumph. And I was absolutely amazed by this. And also, we don't know where it's going to go, because if it came to court, if it actually did, as opposed to settling out of court, which is obviously what's expected, what tends to happen in royal cases. Remember what happened at the Burrell trial. There can be absolute havoc, and I can only say that...
Well, we need something to keep the frisson going now that Boris has settled everything and everything's perfect with respect to Europe.
Of course, I'd forgotten that. My goodness me, you're quite right, of course. We ought to give it a mention. No, but what will undoubtedly happen if that occurs is that so much light will be shed on the spotlight will be on her family, certainly her estranged father. Now, that must be the last thing that she wants. So, you know, this is full of pitfalls. Also, the thought that if she wins the case, which I think would appear undoubtedly likely, must be what she has been advised, will it forever change the nature of the relationship between the royals and the media? I don't necessarily see that as the case, because undoubtedly, from Harry's statement, he sees the media, certainly the tabloids to be specific, but it seemed to go further, as of course the enemy in a sense, and if you declare war or something similar on the press in that way, using that language.
It's at your own peril, at your own risk, and let's face it, you might well be advised, given that you're married to an American, from the likes of the fun things that have been going on in the White House, but it could be dangerous. Talking about Americans, Richard, I noticed in 1968 we have the beginning of what became in our current time a fantabulous Academy Award winning production. Yes, I'm already going out there and saying I think
Renee will pick this up.
I
can see why.
So let's take Meghan and let's take Harry and let's put them on the yellow brick road that the rest of us are on and see if we can also enjoy Judy as reviewed by yourself.
Judy is indeed a remarkable film. It's quite important, too, I think, to mention that it's directed by Rupert Gould, and he joins a tradition, a very honourable tradition, of British theatre directors who make top-class movies, and indeed we're thinking of Sam Mendes, we're thinking of Richard Eyre, and so forth, and, well, here we see a movie about how one of the world's top singers was destroyed. And it's a really tough film to watch, at least I found it very tough to watch. Her story is told in flashback. As a child, she had performed, I hadn't realized this, since she was two. And she was controlled by the ruthless studio boss, Louis B. Mayer, who appears as the predator he undoubtedly was. I mean, she was more or less fed pills. She wasn't allowed to eat a chip, much less a burger. But her whole life as a child was characterized by this, what one would call enforced obedience to a studio system that was utterly inhuman. Elizabeth Taylor, of course, you remember, suffered also so desperately. And we're shown in flashback how horrific her childhood was. One of the faults, I think, in this film, because I think it's a remarkable film because of Renée Zellweger's performance, as you mentioned, but we never see, it's intentional, of course, but we never see her at her height, the success, the glamour. We see flashbacks to a childhood that was horrendous. And we also meet her in 1968 when, in debt, in failing health, she makes a trip to London to perform at the Talk of the Town for Bernard Delfont, played by Michael Gambon. And I mean, she's totally dependent on pills and alcohol. I mean, she seems all but catatonic until she gets on stage, and then very often, but not inevitably, the old magic returns. I mean, it is harrowing viewing her private life. I mean, she marries her fifth husband, the likable but inadequate Mickey Deans, played by Finn Wittstock, remains disastrous, and she has two young children to whom she's devoted, but she simply can't cope. And her fourth husband, Sid Luff, played by Rufus Sewell, can recognize how she's struggling, but what can be done? I mean, one of the tragedies of this film, because this isn't a question of spoilers, everybody knows the end of Judy Garland's tragic story, is that there is this, what, well, this is what Zellweger brings out so brilliantly, this vulnerability, the walk, the way she staggers from place to place. I mean, the tragedy is she is sinking. We know it. She knows it. And no one at that stage, alas, seems to be able to do anything about it, least of all her. And that's what makes the movie so heartbreaking. And I thought that Zellweger's performance, I totally agree with you, But there are cliches in this movie. For example, I mean, she's a gay icon. She signs autographs after a performance for a gay couple, ends up at her flat for dinner as everywhere else is closed, this sort of thing. It's a device that I didn't think really worked. And her assistant and the band leader are obviously stereotypes. But the point with this is the way Zellweger inhabits this role. And I thought that was fantastic.
When you're a headstrong Chinese-American woman, you might sort of say, let's not actually go head-to-head with respect to the 80th anniversary of communism and so on. Let's make a movie and return to China when your beloved grandmother is diagnosed with terminal cancer. Or not, as the case may be. It's a comedy drama, however, that The Farewell is being brought to us by Lulu Wang, Richard.
Indeed, The Farewell is. And The Farewell is a movie to reckon with, because when you walk out, believe me, and no spoilers from me, you will remember this movie. That's all I'm saying there. We meet Billy, played by Awkwafina, an aspiring writer who is very fond of her grandmother, Nai Nai, played by Zhao Shuzhen, who lives in Changchun in China. Her parents are Chinese immigrants to the United States, and they discover that Nai Nai has been diagnosed with terminal lung cancer and has only a short time to live. She hasn't been told the diagnosis, which has been kept a secret. This wouldn't happen in America, but you get an East-West culture clash in this movie, because in China, the family believe that it is they who should take on, so to speak, the burden of knowing but not telling. In the West, it's more the individual, and that, of course, leads to a problem. But there's a wedding for Billy's cousin, Hao Hao. It's been planned as an excuse to get the family together and what they think is going to be the last farewell to Nai Nai. She thinks she's fine. Billy disobeys her parents and turns up, and she thinks Nai Nai should know about her condition. What is enchanting about this movie, and I'm going to say absolutely nothing more about it, the plot, because those who see it, and I think there will be a lot, because word of mouth, and also I would add awards possibilities abound here too, will recommend it. It's not the sort of film. Lulu Wang is basing this. It's partly autobiographical. She's the director and screenwriter, and it's not the sort of movie that would normally get a wide release, but it is charming. It's moving. It was a success at Sundance. It's a fascinating study of the family unit, the cultural clash between East and West, and also the ethics of it. There are outstanding performances, but from Awkwafina as Billy, New York-based. She sees things in a different way to her the rest of her family in China. Her parents, good performances there too, and Zhao Shuzhen is delightful as Nai Nai. But I end my review by simply saying that for reasons that I am not revealing, this is a movie that stays with you in a very joyous way, and also in a way that leads you to reflect on how good everyone is, because it's a movie without contrivance, which so many Hollywood films obviously aren't. I mean, you can see the way that the screenwriters plot, and different plots have been accepted and rejected and so on, and movies have often been divided into different scenes, and the way people behave, you can see it's been written for them. Here, it flows, it's spontaneous. It's a delightful and very touching film.
And thankfully, no sign whatsoever, at least in the trailers, of nuclear missiles, 80th anniversary celebrations, or indeed riot police, which is nice in this sort of world in which we live. But Rory, we've run past two of the things there. Judy, first of all, will you be checking out this It's a Done Deal Academy Award winning nominated production with Renee Zellweger?
To be honest, I haven't. I don't know very much about.
Never seen The Wizard of Oz.
Well, aside from The Wizard of Oz, I've not seen her outside of it.
Wow!
So to see maybe a movie
Mother of
about
Lisa Minnelli
could be very interesting, actually.
Technically referred to as a biopic or biopic.
I would say here. I mean, if you want to see I should have emphasized this more, actually. If you want to see Judy as she was during the period when she really was a star who had few parallels, see the way she sings Somewhere Over the Rainbow. Mm-hmm. And you see a character. It's fascinating. This is why Zellweger is so superb, because the way she, when she performs, and there are hazards in this, but if you actually watch the way also there's this vulnerability in the character, but when she's able to communicate with her songs, it is absolutely amazing to watch. I mean, it really, really is an extraordinary performance. I agree totally with what you said on Oscar nominations, and I hope more than that, though, of course, I haven't seen all the other roles those nominated, but I mean, the facts are that when she's singing, she manages, she somehow, that old magic is recreated, and that...
Because she's a professional, Richard. She's a professional.
That's the key thing. Professional, but somebody who's hanging on by her fingernails.
Exactly. And what about The Farewell, Rory?
I'm always interested to see movies that are doing, you know, something different, and I know it's like fairly, you know, broad these days, but something that is
heartfelt and poignant.
Yeah, heartfelt and poignant.
Probably have to wait until it comes on DVD or Netflix, etc., because I'm not sure whether it'll make Lincoln. But you never know. You never know. I want to, we're building a new cinema, of course, so there will be a new cinema coming to open up to the multiplex. So
to hear it.
Yes, exactly. So good stuff there. As you know, Richard, I certainly believe that most phones are perfectly adequate ways of actually watching all sorts of movies, including Lawrence of Arabia. But let's not go there, particularly after we started off.
It's just
not there. Rory, would you like to put...
I didn't know that. I wasn't aware. We haven't ever discussed that. May I suggest, for a topic when we've got a few minutes, there's no question also we're facing, as you know, the film festival opens and on the 2nd, to the 13th.
Exactly.
There's absolutely no doubt that yesterday we had the opening with David Copperfield and... we have the closing film, and this is my point, The Irishman, Martin Scorsese, which is going to be on Netflix.
It's The Irishman, let's face it, it's The Irishman.
And Scorsese and Netflix are a combination that's tough for the Academy.
Because, lethal.
I mean, I always thought that the fact Roma was on Netflix affected its chances in the Oscars and Green Book.
It's more challenging than Roman Polanski winning at the Venice Film Festival, let's face it. You know, that's a whole other issue. But you know.
Oh, well, that, heavens, you... bringing up so much.
Exactly. Well, I thought if we started off with kind of the controversials of the royals in Africa, we might as well finish with Roman Polanski, kind of go
full
circle
there. Yes, indeed. Why not? Why not? One wonders what will happen next week.
Well, more news from the London Film Festival, I would hope. But Rory, last two questions,
absolutely,
please.
Yes. I'm seeing The King tonight. That's about the Henriade, and that's got Timothy Chalamet as Henry V, so I'm really looking forward to it.
It's going to work well. Go, Rory.
Richard, have you had an interesting telephonic link with us today on the show?
As always, I most certainly have.
And will you be coming back with two more movies again next week?
And views of the London
Film
Festival.
Also a report from the London Film Festival.
Which normally we try and get down to see in some way, shape, or form. It's been far too many years since we did that. We'll have to put that right. However, life continues. And Richard Fitzwilliams will be back with us. Coming up, still on the programme, Ian Lennox briefly, and then two fabulous little features that we'll be doing all about how over 65s on average spend 8 hours alone every typical working day. Over 85s spend 10 hours alone. And then if you're actually heading even older than that, well, who knows what's happening? It's the sort of situation in which people are obviously having to exist in the world today, plus of course news about how the current figures are suggesting that local councils could be doing more to help combat climate change. That's still to come, but as mentioned, now it's time for a reprise of Tessa Snott's Tune of the Week, Die Rockin'.
Raised on Field Hollywood, just spit in my bones. I turn too drunk to stand with cowboy hats and no guitars in Copenhagen cans. I'm gonna rock until I die. I'm gonna die rocking. I'm gonna rock until I die. I'm gonna die rocking. I'm gonna rock until I die. I'm gonna die.
Mental image, Rory, of Steve Bruce, currently the man in charge at Newcastle United, actually using Die Rockin' as a way of actually really motivating the team when, you know, they're 1-0 down and 2-0 down and the 5-0 down. It's just as well that our Leicester supporter actually can't be here, otherwise it would be carnage across the airwaves in many ways. Having said that, if Emma Street was around, I'm sure we could respond by the Bayern Munich result of 7-2, 7-2. But never mind. You know, the bottom line is, Ian, I know, keen Blythe Spartans fan these days, I believe, as opposed to Newcastle United. But were you expecting a 5-0 result against Leicester, Ian?
No, not until the guy got sent off.
And then you thought, whatever. That's
I wasn't expecting anything but a defeat. But Once the guy got sent off with his loose shape and everything, it's just
from the point of
we're in trouble.
Yes. From the point of view of something that Tessa Snart, and it was her piece of music you were listening to, Ian, so don't blame us. It was her tune of the week, Die Rockin'. I wouldn't advise it anyway, shape or form. What's not to love, Rory, about that thing that Ian has actually shared with us, etc.? Would you like to describe, Rory, using your creative writing and journalistic skills, what it is we're looking at present?
Well, what I'm looking at present is a picture of a wooden floor, and on it is a rather, you know, your
flush,
typical cat bed that you would buy from Pets at Home or other available stores.
Yes, yeah.
And next to it is a just a cardboard box.
Just a cardboard box.
Are you in Alex's bedroom?
Ian. I've told you, where we do these shows is open to all sorts of discussions, etc. But it is not, I repeat, not any place I usually put my head down to sleep. Okay.
I heard you work very hard.
Yeah, yes, very true. Yeah.
Long hours.
This is true. Yeah. Carry on, Rory.
Now, between the big cat bed and the cardboard box, this lovely black and white cat has chosen the cardboard box.
Mm-hmm.
And the caption of the picture is, "Don't blame me because you enjoy wasting your money."
Oh, it's my little cat, yes.
Meow.
Yeah. So it's not mine, but it's my speechless thing.
Yeah, well, it's good. It's good to see that, as we know that looking down on us from heaven will be Ollie and Obo. They'll say, "Wow, very good," you know, because they'll do that. Or cat heaven, or various other bits and pieces, which was nice and actually made a change from some of the other sort of traumatic posts that you resend and repackage together. So I thought it was important to actually do that, including actually a shot of your lad Gav, you know, which almost calls for a thing there. Ian's lad Gav on his holes, but now he's back and wearing coats like the rest of us and grumbling about NUFC, the two.
He is.
Yeah, well, you know, he's got to appreciate that although he's lived his entire life probably without seeing Newcastle win a single trophy, because presumably he was born after 1969, First Cup, and probably after the defeat by Liverpool in the 1974 FA Cup final, when, of course, they lost 3-0 Kevin Keegan scoring twice, I believe. Yeah. And, of course, the awesome 1976 defeat in the League Cup final by goals by Dennis Stewart and Peter Barnes, with Alan Gowling responding. So he kind of has never really appreciated the joy of it. I mean, he's had visits to Wembley, played Manchester United, lost, played Arsenal, lost. But other than that, and, of course, came second in the league. Other than that, presumably, he looks back and actually says, well, at the end of the day, at least we can be thankful for Mike Ashley.
I think it's Kevin Keegan.
Is that so?
We had the Keegan years, and I remember walking away from St James's Park one day, and I said, you don't realise how lucky you are to be watching this, because I've gone through purgatory. And the purgatory days are back, I'm afraid.
It's very true.
And not likely to change in the near future either. In fact, they're going to get worse before they get better.
I'd even forgotten that John Barnes used to play for Newcastle, because I was interested
to talk about
three clubs he played for. I was familiar with Watford and Liverpool, but yes, he also
played
for
Ian Rush did as well.
Did Ian Rush play for Newcastle?
I think, yes, he did, yes.
I mean, I know Michael Owen did, but he didn't want to, so, I mean, that's a different
thing. Yeah, he came for that, well, yeah. The whole thing didn't work out with Michael Owen, but I think it's... I haven't been following the recent debate, but I think it's, both sides become polarised, and it's a bit silly.
That's true. About the Rugby World Cup, Ian? I mean, obviously, the bit of a shocker with respect to Japan actually beating Ireland. From that point of view, is that a sign of things to come? Is it a case of, well, they need to win? It's their home nation. They need to actually win. It's not like England.
Yes, they're always going to have trouble with this, the basic size of the population. Mm-hmm. Not the population, of the size of the people in rugby, because you've got to have at least... I mean, if you look at the size of people playing rugby now, it's just ridiculous. Mm. When I was playing at school, well, my father was captaining the universities, and he was in the 30s, and he was 6'2" and, well,
He'd be a pygmy these days. He'd be
a pygmy. Right,
yeah, exactly. Yes. A person of restricted height. Exactly.
Yeah. The first thing he'd be doing would be spending half his life on in gyms, building up muscle and stuff.
Yeah. And the steroids, but let's not talk about that, because that's another time. And not good anyway, as a way forward. But is it shaping up as you expected to see it shaping up, Ian? I mean, I get the feeling with the group stages, it's kind of like, well, apart from Japan, so on.
It's so difficult to say at the moment, because there's so many teams shouldn't be on the same pitch as other teams. I mean, they're going to get 40, 50 points difference in the sides. And occasionally you do get to the... There's about, eight teams. Maybe the England-Argentina game will be interesting. Because Argentina are an emerging nation. They have been emerging for a long time, I suppose. But they have got some very good players.
And the beauty, of course, is, unlike 1986, they can actually handle the ball in this particular instance. You know, in fact, it's positively encouraged. Exactly.
But little scrum half, it would have been.
Small, obviously, but quite feisty, from that point of view. So it would be well worth considering on that basis. And what, pray tell, the key question that the listener is desperate to actually know, have you been preparing with your pots and pans this evening, or this morning indeed, Ian, as you've been obviously doing double duty, commenting on Siren Radio and actually making your breakfast? Has it been anything interesting? Is it an omelette, perhaps?
I've got bacon, baked beans and fried bread today. Mm. It's my favourite breakfast. It's very, very unhealthy, but at my age, what the hell?
Well, so you got flatulence and processed meat. This is fantastic.
Probably.
In some way, shape or form, that's clearly added your carbon footprint to the whole system. That's all right. It's good. We like that. It's not a case of, shaming breakfast. You enjoy it, Ian.
Are you gently admonishing me?
Breakfast is the most important meal of the day, Alex.
That's very true.
Yes.
And having consumed a tuna fish sandwich and a biscuit earlier, I can actually endorse that, from that point of view. It's way forward. And don't get me started. It was dolphin-friendly tuna, obviously. I'm not going to have any other sort. It's as if. Rory, would you like to put those last two questions to Ian Lennox, our man from Tyneside, who knows, maybe next week. I mean, who are you playing over the weekend, Ian?
Manchester United.
Well, you know.
Well, depending on the same. Well, they're not doing very well.
Exactly.
Either, really.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, I mean, and obviously, as a City fan, I'm going to say thrash them. Just thrash them without an inch of their lives. I mean, I'm expecting Newcastle United 8, Manchester United 0, you know, just to actually continue.
Seven of them controversial goals as well. That'll have them really with
Well, there we are. You see, total and complete agreement. Who would have thought we'd reach that particular stage? But we have. Yeah, we clearly
we
have.
Did beat you last season, you know.
Yeah. Move on, Rory.
I mean, I was there. We gave you a goal start as well.
It's coming up to 18 minutes to 9 o'clock. We've got two interviews still to squeeze in. Rory, last two questions.
Ian, have you had a reasonably interesting telephone interview with us today on the show?
I've almost given as good as I've got today. I'm quite pleased.
And will you be coming back again very soon?
Oh, yes.
Breakfast making in the background.
7 days, Ian's breakfast of the day. Hooray!
Hey, you know, everybody's talking about the good old days, right? Everybody, the good old days. Well, let's talk about the good old days. Come to think of it, as bad as we think they are, these will become the good old days for our children. But why don't we try to remember that kind of September when life was slow and oh so mellow. Try to remember. And if you remember, then follow. Oh, why does it seem that the past is always better? We look back and we think the winters were warmer, the grass was greener, the skies were bluer, and smiles were bright. Can it be that it was all so simple then? Or has time rewritten every line? And if we had the chance to do it all again, tell me, would we? Could we?
Memories, as indeed Gladys Knight and her Pips were talking about. And if we actually talk about this next little feature that over 65-year-old souls are spending on average 8 hours alone every typical working day, and those over 85 spending 10 hours alone, significant statistics, I'm sure you find. And we're delighted to welcome back, after a break of far, far, far too long, ace media psychologist, the awesome Linda Papadopoulos, back to the programme to talk about this. How are you, Linda?
I'm great. How are you?
Excellent. Well, we missed you, Linda. I mean, it's been nigh on a year since you last with us.
I know. It's too long.
Far too long, etc. And you've also got, as a superb backup today, the Chief Executive Officer of Home Instead, the delightful Martin Jones. How are you, Martin?
I'm very well, Alex. How are you?
Very good indeed. Now, Linda, if we can turn to you first, this particular survey of over 2,000 seniors aged 65 and over. I suppose, I mean, if you want to be alone, fine, that's okay. But if you are in a situation where a lot of your friends, colleagues, maybe even family have actually passed away and you're sort of, you know, working on that sort of basis, there are challenges with respect to this whole issue.
There really are. Look, we've known for a while that loneliness isn't good for us, right? We're social beings. You know, we know we've got 14 billion years of evolution in us, and we've kind of gotten to where we are by being around people and connecting. And so having this kind of moment in your life where you can go literally hours and hours in the waking day without speaking to anyone, and then weeks, you know, and then months, it's bad, not just for you know, the older person's mental health, but also for their physical health. Now, at the same time, though, one of the things that we're finding, and I think this is what came out of the Home Instead research that we looked at, is when we say, well, what would you like to do in terms of, you know, of your life and where you are? They say, you know what, I want to connect with people, but I also want independence. I want to stay in my home. And I think, you know, this is the big challenge, I think, of what's happening. We all know we have an increasing elderly population. We all know they need the right type of care. And, it's, you know, care isn't just about providing a meal necessarily. Care is about being, you know, heard and listened to. And I think this is what we're learning in the area of gerontology and elderly psychology now, that actually it makes such a difference to be able to kind of maintain that independence, but still also maintain those important connections where they feel heard and listened to.
And Martin, from your own perspective, obviously just listening to Linda there, this is all tying in with keeping folk who are becoming more chronologically gifted more positive, more motivated, and obviously enjoying the time we have on the planet, really.
Yeah, that's quite right, Alex. In terms of, you know, Homestead and Research, we've just done, well, nearly 75% of the people who reply to the survey want to stay in their own home. And the 65% of those older people want companionship to help them to do that. So it's relationship-based care that absolutely is critical. And as Linda just was saying, yes, there's always going to be that task element in terms of helping and supporting an older person. But what really makes the difference is that relationship-based care, you know, and I can say that, you know, from actually running the business I do in Home Instead, but I can say it from the personal experiences. I was a carer for my father when he was alive, and, you know, one of the things that, you know, I did for him, I put in different people to help him keep him at home, but it was, at the time, it was very much task-based, until it really, really was, well, a light bulb moment for me one day that I actually found out that my dad said, you know, I haven't spoken to someone for 3 days. And really then I thought, well, I need to put someone in there that's going that one step further. And that's really what we do at Homestead Senior Care. It's about putting a caregiver in there, because what he wanted was relationship. What he wanted was companionship. What he wanted was someone to take him out and do the things that he's always done for most of his life, as well as the other things like helping him in terms of the bathing, etc. He wanted someone to talk to. I think we forget about that. And because we all lead such busy lives, I think if we all just, if there was a movement, if we could just take 1 minute of one day and said hello to a stranger in the street, or went to a neighbour that you know is living alone, that would make such a massive difference to them, and actually to you as well. So not just to their well-being, but to your well-being as well. And that's just crucial, and that's what we do at Home Instead.
It's a win-win situation. In the studio, we have Rory McGowan. Rory, I'm not sure whether you have grandparents and so on, or hope for that. I mean, you're nodding when you're listening to this. What were your thoughts?
I can't imagine how it must be for them to stay lonely for such a long period of time, seemingly every day. I mean, this really doesn't compare, but I remember one of my first days in Freshers Week where I didn't talk to anybody, and I felt absolutely awful, and that only took a day. And to hear that over 65s are spending kind of this long just alone or not talking to anybody, it's just really sad.
Interesting viewpoint there from a young man in his early 20s, Linda. Again, you know, the message comes across there.
Yeah. But it does. I mean, I think this is, you know, it's the irony of our times. We live in the most connected time, but actually in many ways some of the most loneliest times. So we're speaking about the elderly today, but actually, you know, loneliness, you're absolutely right, transcends. And it's funny because you were speaking with Martin before and he was saying his son just went up to university.
Exactly that.
And exactly that. You know, you're there, it's new. And how do you connect? Yeah.
Take a friendly family robot, perhaps, or maybe not.
Well, I think that there is a serious point there in terms of technology can help and support what we do. And we very much talk in the Homestead of the mantra high tech, high touch. And we've designed an iPad, which we call Grandpad, specifically designed for older people. And that's great. But it will never, for me, replace that human interaction. It'll help and support them reaching out. But a lot of older people now, their biggest interaction with the outside world is the television. That's what they rely upon in terms of that interaction, which is quite sad.
Best place to go, Martin, for further details about Home Instead and other sort of actors that we've been talking about today, where would you point them?
I would point them to firstly to our website, homeinstead.co.uk, and then from that website we can signpost from there, and obviously they can always ring one of our offices. We've got 204 across the UK, so, and they'll be able to give a wealth of support and advice.
Excellent. So, there's so much more we could actually say. We'd push for time, unfortunately, but Linda Papadopoulos, first of all, delighted to have you back on the programme again. Let's not make it too long since you returned, so, you know, we'll go from that basis. Linda, a psychologist, as we always know, and Martin Jones, CEO of Home Instead, many thanks indeed. And
thank you, Alex.
Let's hope we've raised a few issues here, which hopefully we'll actually see us remembering that we are all human beings sharing the same oxygen on the same planet.
Desire. Come, brother, baby. This might be the last, but
Ah, yes, the golden years take us out of one particular feature and into another one, which opens up the whole line regarding climate change and some figures which suggest local councils could be doing much more to help combat climate change. In the East Midlands, the top three performing councils are Derby, with a climate performance rating of 80%, Newark and Sherwood, similar number, and Bassetlaw, with 76%. Now, to talk about this, we're delighted to welcome the Chief Executive Officer at Friends of the Earth, the wonderful Craig Bennett. How are you, Craig?
Good morning. Great introduction. Thank you.
Well, it's always important, as indeed the planet is, as indeed is climate from that point of view. By 2030, I see we're looking for an average of 60% of journeys within local authorities needing to be made by walking or indeed public transport. Currently, at less than a third, only 28%, so a little over a quarter of journeys are made this way. Is it, I mean, obviously it's an achievable task, clearly, but is it heading in the kind of right direction, or is it a case of we need to do more, we need to actually move more quickly?
Well, I think what's really exciting about this survey that Friends of the Earth has done today is, you know, right across England and Wales, you see councils doing really good stuff on trying to tackle climate change. None of them are doing the full package, and that's where there's real opportunities, even for the better performers. But, I mean, actually, it does show that it's going to be, although climate change is clearly a global issue, the action that we need to take on it is very often local and can be done by communities. And so there's huge possibilities here. And that's really what we're trying to encourage people to do today is on the Friends of the Earth website, everyone can go there, you can put in your postcode, and you can find out how your own local authority is doing this and also look at ways to deliver action to encourage them to do more.
Certainly makes sense. Rory, any questions or thoughts from yourself? As I'm sure in Bedfordshire, they're planting trees like crazy.
Oh, wow. But if there is one way I think that we can make climate change or combat climate change even better, isn't necessarily by, you know, making more environment-friendly things cheaper, but making it easier for people to do. So, like, if the council is, you know, struggling to get people on, you know, public transport, for example, it, just making public transport more accessible will encourage people to, you know, get on buses rather than take their cars into work.
Which clearly, Craig, is one of the key things. Human beings being of necessity somewhat lazy creatures. If it can be made much more useful and we look at external sort of routes and so on, that's obviously going to help actually move people from the car, electric or otherwise, to obviously more public systems.
Absolutely right. I mean, it's not rocket science that, you know, if you make something cheap and easy and convenient and reliable for people, they will often choose it as their first preference. And that's exactly the point around local transport. You know, actually, where you see leading councils leading on transport plans, they're making it very easy and reliable and safe. And fun, really, actually, for people to walk and cycle. And then people will do it for all kinds of other reasons, not necessarily for climate change reasons, but they will do it for their own health and to get fresh air and all those kind of things. And that's what we need to see, that the real thing about tackling climate change is so many of the solutions to this have all these other benefits as well. You know, and if you cycle to work, well, you can save money, you don't have to pay money on gym fees, for example. So there's so many options here, and I think the leading local authorities are doing so much, but there's so much more that we can all do. So I think the more that people can look up how their local authority is doing on the Friends of the Earth website, get involved, connect with other people locally to drive that pressure, then we can see much faster change. And I think in reality, you know, nationally, our politics is probably going to be busy with a few other things for the next few years.
I thought that was all being sorted, actually, Craig. I thought everything was all set out and laid out, but perhaps not.
Well, maybe. But, I mean, the point is actually we can't wait for that. We've got to get on and deliver this action locally, and it's going to be so much better for our lives in so many other ways.
Absolutely. And finally, the notion of doubling your tree cover. Average tree cover currently is only 10%. Minimum should be 20%. I mean, that is something which, I mean, despite the fact that from, indeed, partly the University of Lincoln, one of our guest speakers, of course, the wonderful Chris Packham, is involved with respect to the HS2 protests and various other bits and pieces, you know, things like ensuring that trees are planted, they are such a vital, important part of the ecosphere, are they not?
They absolutely absolutely are. I mean, this is a campaign that we launched in the summer, and we've had huge response from the public on. Doubling tree cover is such a sort of brilliant thing to be doing. And even if we double tree cover in the UK from what it is now, we'd still be below what the average is for most European countries. So there's a very long way for us to go. But it's another example about if we do that, that has so many other benefits to our lives. It helps reduce air pollution. Yes, it sucks up carbon from the atmosphere, which is exactly what we need, but it helps with flood alleviation and, of course, cooling in our urban centres. But it just also helps with people's mental and physical well-being. So it seems a good thing to do. And it's tree planting, but not just tree planting. It's also, in many cases, allowing trees to regenerate naturally. And let's start celebrating woody scrub. It's a beautiful thing.
Exactly. Craig Bennett, Chief Executive Officer at Friends of the Earth. Many thanks indeed. I'm sure we'll speak again soon. I mentioned Chris Packham. He's joining us next week. And I'm sure we'll speak with you, your good self, Craig. Keep up the good fight. I'm sure we'll get there in the end. Many thanks.
Thank you.
When you think you've done enough, can you love me harder? 'Cause you know I need that. Put in work and don't give up. Can you love me harder? 'Cause you know I need that.